Lydia Bastianich is one of the most recognizable chefs in America. She's won Emmys and James Beard Awards, and she's also created some of New York's most successful food places, including Felidia, Becco, Del Posto, and Eataly. But Lydia's love of food all started on her grandparents' small farm in the northeastern corner of Eataly that's now part of Slovenia.
She's Croatia. Croatia,
is it?
Yeah, it is.
Well, it's so confusing to me, that area.
It is.
But I've been up there, and I think I'm going to be going again in the fall to Venice and then to Trieste and then to a town called Cormons, which I just adore.
We have a little we have our winery in Cividale del Friuli. We have a little inn, so you got to let me know. You got to come, and we'll cook.
Well, I'm being invited by Lydia. It's going to make my vacation even better. Well, she's called her latest installment of her Nona Tell Me a Story books for children, Lydia's Exciting Farm Adventure, a little pun there. And in it, she tells her grandchildren about what life was like raising chickens when she was younger. She takes them on a tour of a local egg farm and even provides a few recipes suitable for young cooks. It's published by Running Press Kids, and I'm very pleased it has brought Lydia Bastianich back to our show.
A pleasure to be here and celebrate your anniversary with you.
This book is addressed to your grandchildren. How many do you have now?
I have five.
Wow. Your children and grandchildren grew up around food, but not the way you grew up around food.
Well, you see, this book actually is my third book, and it's about food. Now, when the children, my children now
The third book for kids. You've written a lot of cookbooks.
Yeah, third book for kids. And my grandchildren are from 9 until 18, so they're big. But when they were small, they would come over the house, and, of course, the sleepover, we would pile up all in the bed. And the question always was, Nona, tell me a story. Tell us a story when you were a little girl on the farm. When I was a little girl, it was magical. And I think that my love for food really goes back to that little courtyard with grandma and with all her animals.
And you've dedicated this book to your Nona Rosa. What did she like to cook?
Well, Nona Rosa was my maternal grandmother, and she lived a little bit outside of the city. She had this courtyard, and around the courtyard there were all the pens, animal pens or barns. We had goats, we had pigs, we had chickens, we had ducks, we had rabbits, and then also the garden, of course. So Nona Rosa cooked very much, maintained these animals, the food, the eggs, the meat, and the vegetable garden.
Now, that area, Venezia Friuli, is an odd part of Italy because it's both Italian, but also it's a conglomeration of all of the neighboring countries.
It is. It's right on the border. And actually, the little peninsula that I was born is Istria. And as you noted, it after World War II, Italy lost the war. That whole area, Istria and Dalmatia, was given to the newly formed Yugoslavia, communist Yugoslavia. The ethnic Italians migrated back into Italy, and hence we came to the United States.
But what I remember about Friuli was that the food was kind of Italian, the buildings were kind of Italian, but there was also, it looked Hungarian,
it is.
Austrian, it Croatian, is. And is. You could get goulash, strudels, sauerkraut.
That area was under the Austro-Hungarian Empire also for I think, 80 years. So for me, to cook with sauerkraut is equal as cooking with pasta, the palacinke, the goulash, the strudel. For me, all of those, making those things are part of who I am.
In the book, one of your grandchildren thinks of chicken as something pink and squishy.
Well, I think that's the reason for the book, is really to bring children into the reality of food, where it comes from and how it grows. And in this book is specifically about the eggs and the story about, you know, going and collecting the eggs. Kids today think that eggs come from a carton, a box.
Well, they're separated from the food that they eat.
That's exactly.
It comes wrapped in the supermarket in saran wrap.
Right, the chicken in that saran wrap or whatever, in that plastic wrap, you know, it's far removed from a real chicken, and which gives us the eggs as well. So, you know, they have to connect. At the end of the book, I actually put in 4 or 5 or 6 recipes because, you know, I would like them to get involved with their parents or grandparents, not just reading the book, but really getting in the kitchen and cooking.
And you have been generous enough to share one of the recipes with our listeners. We've posted it on our show page at WNYC.org. It's your mother's recipe for chicken and potatoes, and you've added a few special touches.
Yeah, chicken and potatoes, you know, a whole chicken. Again, not just the breast. You take the whole chicken, pieces of chicken. That's what Grandma did. And it was one pan on top of the stove. I do it in a cast iron pan with some onions, with some potatoes, and everything gets caramelized and rosemary. And this, very simple. You know, it's a simple recipe that could be done on top of the stove and have luscious flavors to feed the whole family.
Do you also include the chicken innards? The reason I ask is often they're not even included when you buy a chicken at the supermarket, but sometimes they come in a little paper wrapping that's stuffed into the cavity of the chicken, and people just take the whole thing out and throw it in the garbage.
Oh, how terrible. So I use that, the liver I put separately, and I come in and collect the livers actually in the freezer. My mother, who's 94, loves chicken liver, and ultimately I pull it out and I have a meal for her with the chicken liver.
Is it like Jewish chicken liver?
Yeah, that's not different. It's the same thing, you know, sauteed with some onions. She loves it. I make a little Veneziana with a little bit of vinegar in there, and there we go. But what I do with the chicken, especially even in doing this chicken, if you cut it up in pieces, get a whole organic chicken, then the tip of the wings, the whole back, the innards, I save all of that and make a soup. I save it from one chicken, from two chickens. When you have it from two chickens, you have enough to make 4 quarts of great chicken soup.
I just spoke to Dan Barber the other day, and he's starting a new project to make food out of all the stuff that we waste.
For me, if you look at my recipes, recycling bread, you know, papa al pomodoro, the Italians have been doing this. I mean, my grandmother, you know, I mean, papa al pomodoro, where you use the old bread with some tomatoes, you make a great soup. Panzanella, again.
The Parmesan rinds.
Parmesan rinds in the soups, in the chicken soup. I save all those rinds and you throw it in and they just magnify the flavor of the soup.
The story you've written here mentions that you used to collect eggs for your grandmother twice a day. Mm-hmm. You fed the chickens and you clean the coops. That's no fun.
Well, it's part of the job. You got to know. Absolutely. You know, my grandmother knew exactly the clock of the chicken, you know, which one laid the egg and how many eggs she was going to have that day. It was amazing. She had them timed.
You talked about some of these things when you participated in a low-patent locavores event I did at the Green Space. Do you teach your grandchildren about these tasks as well?
Oh, absolutely. I get them involved as much, you know, as much as they want when they come and visit. And let me tell you, I think what I've noticed is that when they're small, 3, 4, 5, 6, they love to get their fingers dirty and get into the thing. Then they go through a span of kind of, with their friends, they're meeting new friends. But you know, when they come back, when they're 15, 16, 17, they have their big friends, they're getting ready to go to college, they need to cook something to impress their friends with. So my bigger ones are coming back now, the 16, 17-year-olds, back in the kitchen.
This book is about your love of eggs, and you write that when you were growing up and you didn't have much, you often would just have an egg as a meal. How would your grandmother prepare them?
Oh, eggs are such a, you know, basic and nourishing food. It's a complete food. But you know how I loved it the best? She did many ways. She put it in a stracciatella, in a soup. She did a frittata. But what I loved the best is she would put a little bit of olive oil, cut up a potatoes, peel it, make French fries. And then in the same pan where the potatoes were frying, just crack an egg or two and just mix it in with the potatoes. So you get this kind of mixtures of French fries and potatoes fried on top of that, all in olive oil. Delicious.
Do you have tricks for making a really good frittata?
A really good frittata is, I guess, what you put into it. What I love in it to give it some texture, again, the use of old bread. You kind of cut it in pieces and you soak it a little bit in the egg when you're whisking the eggs. I love vegetables. What it is that you sauté the vegetables, the onions, and then that you make sure that when you pour the liquid, the eggs, that you let it stay so it forms a base, a nice solid base. Don't mix right away. And then after that, slowly on the top, then I put it in the oven and finish it off in the oven so it gets a nice crust in the oven.
Now, you can go to a supermarket and find about 7 or 8 different kinds of eggs. Then you go to a farmer's market and find 3 or 4 more different kinds of eggs. Go to a farm stand and find another kind of egg. How different is the taste?
I think, you know, it's there is a difference. There's a difference.
Well, what do you look for?
Well, you know, the first thing you will notice right away the color of the yolks. It's intense and it tells you already that it's richer. But the flavor is, you know, depends on what these chickens eat. It all comes back into the egg. You know, if they eat the grasshoppers, the real grass and seeds and all of that, that will come. They'll be tastier. It'll be kind of, there'll be more texture to the egg yolk. I just smell it and tell me.
You know, I was just going to say, can chickens be fed almost anything? Will they eat yogurt and whatever you have left over?
Chicken will eat just about anything. Absolutely. The table scraps, you know, when we peel the an apple, a pear, the remnants, you know, we had fresh figs. And so the skins of the figs, we would throw it all to the chickens, and the chickens will peck at anything.
And will you taste that in the egg?
You know, individually not, but absolutely. The richness of you can tell the difference between a free-ranged, an egg from a free-range chicken and one that has been fed this mixture of corn or whatever.
How long before you say, I'm not going to use these eggs anymore? They've been sitting in the refrigerator for a little while.
Eggs also have a fairly good long lifespan. And so it's great to rotate them, you know, keep them for a week to 10 days, and that's okay in the refrigerator. But, you know, to test an egg, maybe when you break an egg onto a flat plate, and if you see the albumin around the yolk nice and kind of raised up and solid, that's still fresh. If the albumin, the white part, floats all over the plate, then the egg is already old. But rarely will it really harm you.
Well, it's when you start smelling the egg.
Exactly. Then that's
when it's scary. My guest is Lydia Bastianich, who's written any number of cookbooks for adults, but now she has a series called Nona Tell Me a Story. And the latest in this series is Lydia's Egg Sighting Farm Adventure. It is published by Running Press Kids, has wonderful illustrations by Renee Grail. And did you come up with that pun, egg sighting?
I think we did as a group. You know, you do things as a group. But also I want to share with you that all the illustrations, this is real. All the names, these are all my grandchildren. They're standing still in a time. They were captured in that time when they were that age. But these are all kind of look-alike of my grandchildren and myself and my whole family. And the names are all real. Even the cat and the dog is ours.
Although the chicken on the cover and the little chicks, I'm sure, are no longer with us.
Now, there must be some soup or something.
As you mentioned earlier, I'm celebrating my 30th year here at WNYC this week. And you've been on the show many times over the years, not only as a guest here, but also in the green space where you judged the hot plate cook-off contest between Jacques Pepin and Michel Nichan. You had to be a diplomat on top of everything else.
I did.
You were a panelist for our Low Patent Locavore series when you talked about building a restaurant empire. And each time we've gotten to see how you've expanded your brand, including writing children's books. Do you have other things in the works?
I think, you know, it's books. There's a great book in the fall coming out, kind of a real master book. It's about 450 pages, so I'm really excited about that.
Is that going to be connected to the TV shows?
Ultimately, yes. But it's about book, because in that book there's going to be techniques and glossary and all kinds of you know, about Italian food. So that I'm kind of in the finishing ends of it. But we are opening Italy, you know, our Italy, I think, in the Twin Towers down in New York downtown. So that's exciting. That's going to be
You're opening up another Italy.
Yes.
Second one. The first one's on 23rd Street.
Right. The second one in New York City. We have one in Chicago. And there's one going up in São Paulo as well. So
well, there's it's also in Italy, isn't it?
Italy absolutely. Series.
How different are they here? And how because we've talked in the past about how American Italian food until fairly recently was very different than the Italian food you ate in Italy.
Absolutely. So Italy is about it's a concept that was. Kind of pulled together by Oscar Farinetti. He's from Torino, and they have their mother store there, and they have several in Italy and also in Turkey and around Europe. But the concept is a very sound one because it is connected with slow food, and what we exalt is the small producers, the unique small producers. So when you come to our stores, chances are that maybe 60% of what you can buy there you cannot find in regular stores.
It's weird to talk about Italian food because really Italy is so regional. We were talking earlier about you growing up in the northeastern part of Italy, where the food is very different from what you would find in Genoa, and then again different from Florence, definitely different from Naples or the south. And yet we all talk about it as Italian food.
Yes, that's the common denominator. Italy is Italy is smaller than California, and 20 regions, and from region to region, the same recipe, whether you have pasta fagioli, it differs. And that's the beauty of it, too, because the topography is so different. You know, the peninsula, it has the mountains, a lot of sea, so a lot of microclimates. So there's a lot of different things that grow in different places that are better in one than the other. And that's what really makes the Italian food so delicious and so unique.
I mentioned that you've been on the show many times, but one of the more memorable conversations happened when I wasn't here. It was when Christopher Walken guest hosted in 2010. The two of you grew up together in Queens and worked in his parents' bakery?
Absolutely. We're still friends. It was in Astoria, and Walken's bakery was right on Broadway and 30th Street. We lived right across. And when I was 14, actually, I went in and I looked for a weekend job.
Now, you were just here a couple of years at that
exactly.
point.
Exactly. I lied. I told them I was 16. I was 14, but I was always a big girl. And so they took me as a sales girl for the weekend, and I stayed there for 7-8 years. Then my mother came, and we became friends. The boys, there's three brothers. Christopher has two other brothers, and they would come on a weekend and work too. I remember Christopher on the weekend delivering wedding cakes to the wedding places around Astoria.
And I'm sure that when you look back to that time and look at what's happened in your life and what's happened in his life, you have to be stunned.
I am, you know.
Did you have a sense that he was special then?
I think for me he was, yeah, he was special. He loved dancing, and he was always kind of, because I remember going to his first show here. He was with Liza Minnelli. They did Best Foot Forward on Broadway. That was his first show.
He began as a dancer. He still is a great dancer, but he doesn't get to dance enough.
No, he's a great dancer. So, yeah, you could tell, you know, when somebody is a little special. And, he kept it up. He's just marvelous. But you know what? He's the same Christopher that I knew 30, 40 years ago, shall we say.
And I'm sure you're surprised by how your life has turned out.
It has. Leonard, I am so grateful, so surprised. And sometimes it's, oh, look what you are kind of made or accomplished. But for me, it's ongoing. You know, it's, yes, there's a lot that I've accomplished. But the challenges of what's happening, it's amazing. I don't even think that that's really me when they're describing all these things that have been done. You know, I say, is that me?
Well, you also have your children and grandchildren to write books to and about and collaborate with some of your children in some of the restaurant ventures that you've done. The latest book is part of the Nona Tell Me a Story series. It's called Lydia's Egg-Siting Farm Adventure with wonderful illustrations by Renee Grail. Mm-hmm. And it's published by Running Press Kids. Lydia,
Leonard,
pleasure having you here.
Yeah,
go ahead.
On Tuesday, March 10th, mm-hmm. I will be at Italy down on 23rd Street.
That's 23rd and Broadway.
Right. I have a class for children, but thereafter I will be signing the books. So in the evening on the 10th of March, if anybody would like to come, or if they like to go to my website, lydiasitaly.com, they get a signed copy.
And bring the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring the kids.
Thank you so much for being with us again.
Happy anniversary, and a pleasure to be here and to listen to you when I'm not here.
Thank you.